The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, it's Valentine's Day, February 14th. What is Valentine's Day and why do we celebrate it? You might be surprised how unromantic the history of Valentine's Day really is. Some of us love thrilling at the prospect of spending a whole day celebrating it. Others feel like the popular version of love has been commercialized and confused. But regardless of how you feel about Valentine's Day, the holiday of love is one of the most popular traditions in Western culture. Throughout the history of Valentine's Day, people have used the holiday as an excuse to celebrate romantic love and passion. These days, it's also a time to celebrate platonic love, with everybody from elementary-age children to the elderly sharing Valentines. But this holiday didn't just magically appear out of nowhere, and contrary to popular belief, it wasn't invented by greeting card companies. Valentine's Day has a rich and slightly morbid history that you may not know about. Read on to learn the history of Valentine's Day, how the holiday is celebrated, and who the heck St. Valentine really was. Spoiler, it wasn't just one person. Make sure you enter the season of love armed with the best Valentine ideas. What is Valentine's Day? Valentine's Day is an annual holiday celebrated in the United States and many other countries around the world. Historically, it has commemorated romantic love, but recently it's been expected to include all types of love. When is Valentine's Day? This holiday always occurs on the 14th day of the month of February, but the day of the week rotates. You'll learn which day of the week to expect the holiday for the next 5 years. You know, just in case you want to make those Valentine's Day reservations now. Obviously, it's today, Tuesday, February 14th. However, next year, it's Wednesday, February 14th. And in 2025, it's Friday, February 14th. And in Saturday, 2026, it's Saturday, February 14th. And then Sunday, February 14th in 2027. Who is Valentine's Day named for? First, the simple answer. Valentine's Day is named for St. Valentine. But it gets more complicated from here. As it turns out, at least three Valentines were sainted by the Catholic Church, and each one has his own group of supporters claim he's behind the holiday. The first St. Valentine was a rebel, defying a decree from the Roman Emperor Claudius II, who said young men were not allowed to be married and had to serve in the military instead. The Romans believed single men made better soldiers. St. Valentine continued to marry the lovers in secret. The second St. Valentine helped Christian prisoners escape Roman jails, until he was caught and imprisoned himself. His last act before death was to miraculously heal the daughter of his jailer, thereby converting the whole family to Christianity. In some versions of the story, St. Valentine II was even in love with the daughter, but their love was tragically cut short. The third St. Valentine was a Catholic bishop in Tournai. History hasn't remembered much about him, and the stories of all three saints become entwined over the centuries. The story became so murky and confusing that in 1969 the Catholic Church removed the St. Valentine's feast day from the Christian liturgical calendar. But there was one unfortunate thing all three men had in common besides their name, and it'll give you pause before uttering your next Happy Valentine's Day. In a very unromantic twist, all three were martyred by beheading by different Roman emperors. In some versions of the stories, the men were all executed on or near February 14th, in different years, of course. But historians have been unable to verify that detail. So what is the history of Valentine's Day? Like many modern holidays that have been celebrated for centuries, Valentine's Day has its roots in paganism. Lupercalia was a pagan fertility festival typically celebrated in February. Like Cupid, the symbol of Valentine's Day, it had ties to a Roman god. The festival was dedicated to Faunus, the Roman god of agriculture, and to Romulus and Remus, the Roman founders. Lupercalia was all about fertility, but not about the modern sense of love and romance. Priests from an order called Luperci sacrificed a goat and a dog, skinned them, soaked their hides in blood, and then used them to gently whip young women, a tradition aimed at making the women more fertile. After that, the women's names were put in a jar, and each eligible young man drew a name, forming a couple for the next year and possibly leading to marriage if it worked out. In an effort to clean up the pagan holiday, Pope Gelasius I integrated Lupercalia with St. Valentine's Day in the 5th century. The new holiday quickly spread to all the countries that practiced Christianity. Chaucer and Shakespeare also played part in changing the holiday from a bloody sex festival to a modern love story by writing about it in a sweet, lighthearted, and decidedly less lascivious way. Christian settlers brought the holiday with them to the New World, where it became one of the most popular holidays during the Victorian era. In 1900s, people began giving one another Valentine's Day cards, and Hallmark began offering them in 1913. The tradition grew from there, and today Hallmark estimates 145 million Valentine's Day cards are exchanged each year. Valentine's Day was never named an official national holiday in the United States, but it remains the 13th most popular holiday in the country, coming in just after St. Patrick's Day. So what are some of the popular Valentine's Day traditions? Valentine's Day is filled with fun traditions, including decorating with paper hearts, coloring everything red and pink, and giving a Valentine gift for him and Valentine gifts for her. Eating candy conversation hearts. Heart-shaped and printed with short saying, these chalky, but still really delicious, sweets are unique to Valentine's Day. But where did they come from? Candy hearts originated in the late 1800s with a Boston pharmacist who made Necco wafers as lozenges. His brother got the brilliant idea to print sayings on them for many occasions. But it was the messages of love that really took off. One of the first Valentine messages was, "How long shall I have to wait? Please be considerate. How romantic." By 1910s, they were a fixture of the holiday. Eventually, Brock's made them smaller, shaped them into hearts, and added candy heart sayings we all know and love today. Giving Valentines. According to lore, the second St. Valentine's didn't just fall in love with his jailer's daughter. He also sent her a final farewell letter, signed, "From Your Valentine." Romantic Victorians ran this with the phrase, signing it onto elaborate Valentine's Day cards, professing their love during the holiday. In 1913, when Hallmark began mass-producing official Valentines, it cemented the tradition, which continues to this day. Sending bouquets of red roses. Valentine's Day flowers universally symbolize romantic love, and these days a bouquet of red roses is one of the most popular gifts to give a loved one on Valentine's Day. But why? Well, it helps understand the meaning behind rose colors. Red has long represented love and passion, perhaps because it's the color of blood being pumped through the heart. The rose comes from Roman mythology. The red rose, symbolizing the blood of Adonis, the god of love, was dedicated specifically to Venus, the goddess of love. Similarly, white roses symbolize purity. Pink roses intertwine purity and romance, so many lovers choose bouquets with all three colors. Giving heart-shaped box of chocolates. This tradition, much like much of the history of Valentine's Day, has roots in the distant past. Several ancient cultures, including the Aztecs, considered chocolate to be an aphrodisiac. That, combined with the relative scarcity of sugar, made the chocolate a popular gift to symbolize love and devotion. Things took a turn for commercial in the early 1900s, when Cadbury created heart-shaped box for its chocolates. From there, it's history. To this day, Valentine's Day chocolates are the number one most popular gift during the holiday. Decorating with hearts. Hearts of the non-anatomical variety are the symbols of love because the heart has long been considered the center of emotion and passion. When we're in love, we often feel it in our chest. After a breakup, we experience heartbreak. In fact, we have a lot of words tied to a lot of emotions centered on our ticker. Heartfelt, heartwarming, heart-wrenching, and so on. But why exactly does our symbol of love look so different from the shape of an actual human heart? A centuries-old anatomical misconception may be to blame. In describing a human heart, Aristotle noted the heart has three cavities and said the rounded end of the heart is at top. The pointed end is very large, fleshy, and firm in texture. Try to draw that and you might end up with the sort of Valentine's Day heart we see plastered over everything in early February. But hey, they're easy to draw and make a nice vehicle for funny Valentine's quotes and silly V-Day puns. Now for something a little less frivolous. The Healthy, wellness from thehealthy.com. Soothe the Sunday scaries. How to replace work week dread with fun day. Most of us look forward to the weekend as a time to relax, connect with friends and family, and tackle the items from to-do list that gets neglected during the work week. But as the weekend comes to an end, many of us are missing out on Sunday Funday. instead of experiencing a looming sense of anxiety and even dread about the upcoming week. Experts have dubbed this existential worry the Sunday scaries. Polls say 75 to 80% of people experience these Sunday scaries, says Amanda Stephen, a licensed therapist and owner of Fundamental Growth, a therapy practice in Los Angeles. The Sunday scaries is an overwhelming feeling of dread and anxiety about going to work or school the next day, says Renee Goff, a licensed clinical psychologist and the owner of Orchid Wellness and Mentoring, an online mental health service, and it can be experienced physically as well as mentally. Some people describe it as a heaviness they can feel in their body, while others feel so jittery they could jump out of their skin, says Goff. Anticipatory anxiety is a natural response that happens in preparation for anything that can cause pain or discomfort, including the pressures and deadlines of our jobs and fearing losing the financial security they provide. While the Sunday scaries cause anxiety and sadness, it doesn't mean you have anxiety disorder or depression, explains Angela Ficken, a psychotherapist based in Boston. Ficken adds that the characteristic Sunday scaries, feeling of dread, nervousness, sadness, or anxiousness, might even start bubbling up as early as Saturday. But by the time Monday rolls around, you can start your work week, the anxiety tends to subside and not return until the following weekend. That sense of dread on Sunday can come from many different sources, including fear of failure, criticism or judgment at work, especially from higher-pressure jobs, even if it's a job you love. A reminder after a weekend of me time that the next 5 days will be mostly given to your work. Exhaustion after a really busy weekend, making you apprehensive about the demands of the coming week. But even though the Sunday scaries are common, they are manageable. Here's how experts say you can ease your end-of-the-week anxiety. Number one, structure your Sunday. Structure can be your best friend when feeling the Sunday scaries, says Ficken. Instead of sitting on the couch watching the clock, go do something that you enjoy. You might still get whiffs of that sense of dread, but that feeling is harder to hold on to when you're engaging in something that makes you feel good, she says. And don't forget to relax. When structuring your Sunday, try not to cram in too many errands and chores. If you're feeling more stressed in general, it's important to make space for relaxing activities to ground yourself, says Nyla Warren, a therapist and clinical content manager at Real, an online mental health care resource, and there's no right way to relax. Maybe a body can scan meditation, maybe a mid-afternoon shower or bath, maybe an engaging movie or show, Warren says. Whatever feels like a helpful distraction to reground from the scaries. Try to identify your anxiety sources. Anxiety is a normal human experience, and one of the main ways to manage it is to identify your personal triggers. Try to pinpoint what's really causing you to dread the week, Jeff says. Is it a deadline meeting or a presentation? Even if there is not a single reason behind your Sunday anxiety, organizing the stress you expect from the week ahead into bite-sized chunks can help make it all the more manageable. Create multiple to-do lists, Goff recommends. One for lists for tasks that need to be completed immediately, another for tasks that are less urgent, and a final task list you'd like to complete at some point. Seeing these can help you put into perspective what's important and what you can let go now. This can help decrease the anticipation of stress and dread of the week. Create some excitement for the week ahead. Getting rid of the Sunday scaries isn't just about minimizing the doom and gloom of the week ahead, either. Having something to look forward to gives you something to think about that's pleasing, rather than only focusing on the dread you feel. It's a form of reframing your thoughts. Instead of focusing on the awful things you expect from the week, build excitement over a coffee or lunch date with a friend you've been meaning to catch up with. This gives you the opportunity to shift your thoughts to something fun and will help improve your mood. End your Sunday with the right energy. Make Sunday nights about doing something for yourself to counteract the anxiety you're feeling about Monday. Maybe that means planning some favorite foods to enjoy while watching football, or maybe you can go all in for some self-care. This is an opportunity to give yourself proper wind-down time. Maybe you want to journal, do a face mask, read a few pages of a good book. Allow yourself to decompress so you can feel empowered and confident you'll be ready for the next day. Do your best to honor this time and make Sunday night all about you. Leave the work emails for Monday morning. And here's the thing about I tried it, a water flosser. I'm 45 years old and have never had a cavity. Until recently, I relied on regular floss and dental picks. But I decided to try a water flosser to see how it would compare. I started with the lowest pressure setting and used the flosser every day for a few weeks. Playing around with different settings, I even tried it after using my regular dental picks to see if it dislodged anything beyond what I'd already removed, and in a few cases it did. I liked the clean feeling I felt afterward. I still floss, but for anyone who's not a fan of traditional flossing, wears braces or had dental work that makes flossing difficult, a good water flosser might be their new best friend. Continue the healthy. Shots to shoot for. If you haven't given much thought lately to smallpox, polio, or diphtheria, that's because these once dangerous diseases have been eradicated or now well controlled, thanks to the success of earlier vaccination programs. But the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, estimates that currently fewer than a quarter of American adults have received all age-appropriate vaccines. While some vaccines are given in childhood and confer protection for life, others must be repeated into adulthood. The virus that causes measles, for instance, is a very stable virus. It doesn't change. Basically, the virus today is the same as it was in 1935, says Willen Schaefer, M.D., the medical director of the National Foundation for Infections, for Infectious Disease. That means a childhood measles vaccine provides lifelong protection. Flu and COVID viruses, on the other hand, mutate frequently, so the vaccines need to be updated and repeated. Here are the CDC's vaccine recommendations for adults age 19 and older. Note, some guidelines change for adults with additional risk factors or health conditions. Ask your doctor for more information. Flu, one dose annually. COVID-19, boosters as they become available, and that may soon be an annual thing, too. Tdap, a booster every 10 years, also with each pregnancy or for wound management. MMR, one to two doses for those born in 1957 or later who have not been fully immunized. Varicella, chickenpox, two doses for unvaccinated adults who have never had chickenpox. Zoster, shingles, two doses for adults age 50 and older. HPV, two to three doses before age 26 or before age 45, depending on your doctor's recommendation. Pneumococcal, for all adults over age 65, one dose PCV15 followed by PBSV23 and one dose PVC20. That's pneumococcal. Hepatitis A, people with certain medical conditions or those who are traveling overseas may require two to three doses depending on the vaccine. Hepatitis B, two to four doses for all adults depending on the vaccine. And meningococcal, recommended for previously unvaccinated adults who are in college or in the military or have a compromised immune system. News from the world of medicine. Drinking coffee can lead you to overspend. If you head out to do some shopping this weekend, be careful what you choose to sip on. As an experiment, scientists gave away beverages outside stores in France and Spain. They offered regular coffee to 150 shoppers and decaf coffee or water to another 150. On average, the shopper who drank caffeine spent 50% more money. While they bought a comparable number of utility and products, utensils say, they splurged more on fun items, such as scented candles. The reason, as researchers explain, could be that caffeine often creates a state of energetic arousal that enhances the appeal of non-essential goods, something to keep in mind if exceeding your budget causes you stress. How to prevent kidney stones. If you've had a kidney stone, your chances of reliving that excruciating experience within 5 years are around 30%. But eating the right foods could reduce that risk, according to new research from the Mayo Clinic. Study authors asked first-time kidney stone patients about their dietary habits and monitored which people went on to form more stones. The authors concluded that consuming 1,200 milligrams per day of calcium, found in foods such as dairy products and leafy greens and sardines, could help prevent stones from forming. Researchers also recommend getting more potassium from foods such as bananas, oranges, and mushrooms. For people who haven't formed kidney stones, drinking plenty of fluids can help keep that from happening. Why cannabis addiction is up. Over the past decade, the number of people seeking treatment for cannabis addiction has increased by 76%, according to the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction. It's no coincidence that during the same time, the average strength of cannabis products increased around the world. A review published in the Lancet of Psychiatry linked higher concentrations of THC, the main psychoactive ingredient in these products, with a greater likelihood of getting hooked. Make time to sit and think. Imagine being alone with your thoughts without distractions. Sound idyllic or boring? If that's your initial reaction, you might like it more than you expect. Researchers at Kyoto University in Japan asked participants to sit and let their minds wander for 20 minutes. Beforehand, study subjects rated how they thought they would feel. Afterwards, they reported how they actually felt. On average, they found that sitting with their thoughts were more enjoyable and engaging than they had anticipated. Previous studies suggested that thinking time can help people enhance creativity, solve problems, and find more meaning in life. Fear of vaccines can cause side effects. People who are afraid of vaccines are more likely to feel lightheaded when they get a shot, according to a study from Ohio State University. For some people, fear can disrupt the nervous system and affect blood flow to the brain. If you are scared of shots, when you go in for your appointment, try crossing your legs and tightening the muscles in your thighs, abdomen, and buttocks for 5 seconds, releasing for 5 seconds and repeating until you stand up from the chair. The idea is to temporarily raise your blood pressure, which will help prevent dizziness by circulating more blood to your head. Okay, let's have a few giggles now after the serious stuff. Laughter, the best medicine. A proud lion spots a chimp and roars, "Who is the king of the jungle?" "You are, mighty lion," says the trembling chimp. Next, the lion stops a zebra. "Who is the king of the jungle?"
You are, stammers the zebra.
Feeling cocky, the lion swaggers up to an elephant and demands, "Who is the king of the jungle?" The unfazed elephant snatches up the lion with his trunk, smashes him against a tree a dozen times, and stomps off. The dazed lion shouts, "Just because you don't know the answer doesn't mean you have to get nasty about it." Corporations spend years building up a product's brand. Jimmy Fallon invited viewers of The Tonight Show to ruin all that work by simply adding one word to a product's name. Ben and Jerry's Chunky Monkey Pox.
Gorilla Tapeworms.
Essential Oil Spill. K-Pop Tarts. Peppermint Cow Patties. Fleetwood Mac and Cheese. Easy Bake Cremation Oven. Barnes & Noble Gases. Just ended day 7,000 of never having used a Pythagorean theorem. No kidding. How can you tell a Russian pessimist from a Russian optimist? The pessimist says things couldn't get worse. The optimist says, yes, they can. A judge tells the defendant, "You're charged with attacking your boss with a hammer. You jerk," tells a voice from the back of the courtroom. "You're also charged with attacking a bartender with a hammer," the judge continues. "Jerk," bellows the same man. The judge bangs his gavel. "Sir," he says, "one more outburst and I'll charge you with contempt." "I'm sorry, Your Honor," says the man, "but I've been this jerk's neighbor for 10 years, and every time I asked to borrow a hammer, he said he didn't have one." What's the difference between a $20 steak and a $55 steak? February 14th. Star-crossed kitties. Reader's Digest cartoonist Bob Eckstein insists there are ideal names for cats in Hollywood. Fleas Weatherspoon, James Spade, Hissy Spacek, Jimmy Kibble, Leonardo DiCaprio, DiCatnapio, Meow Farrow, Spike Flea, Tabby McGuire, Will Ferrell. Food for thought. I'm tired of people saying, "Here's my go-to lazy meal," and then they start chomping on an onion. I hate people who say it's too early to be eating that. What time do a stomach open? The waitress said, "Wow," after I ordered. Charcuterie ain't nothing but some Lunchables that went to Harvard. If HGTV has taught me anything, it's that the key to happiness is an open concept layout, double sinks in the bathroom, a kitchen island the size of Hawaii, and a $1.2 million budget. Okay, let's switch over to Consumer Reports for the last half hour or so. Last week we were doing supplements, and we missed a couple because we didn't have enough time. So let's go to the increasing physical strength or stamina. Protein powders. Why they're used. Consuming enough protein can help build new muscle and aid in muscle recovery. The evidence. Research does show that people who do a lot of strength training and don't get enough protein in their diet may benefit from supplements, at least in the short term. But most other people do not need them. And testing by CR in 2010, and more recently by the nonprofit Clean Label Project, has found concerning levels of lead and other contaminants in certain protein powders. Iron. Why it's used. Adequate iron intake can promote healthy levels of hemoglobin in your blood, which your body needs to carry oxygen throughout your body, and can make exercise easier. The evidence. People with anemia sometimes need additional iron, Saper says. Supplements may also raise hemoglobin levels, at least in women, though they can also cause gastrointestinal discomfort, research suggests. And high doses can harm the liver. So in general, skip the pills unless you have received an iron deficiency diagnosis. Antioxidants. Why they're used. Athletes may take them after their workouts in an effort to ease soreness and enhance recovery. Don't bank on this benefit. A large 2017 review of the research did not find evidence that high-dose antioxidant supplementation significantly relieves muscle soreness. More worrisome, some previous research suggests that antioxidants may actually hinder your recovery. What else to try? Exercise itself. Especially strength training is one of the best ways to improve strength and stamina. And a diet rich in nutrient-dense foods that are high in protein can aid in muscle building and recovery. Losing weight. Protein powders. Why they're used. Protein can curb hunger, so some people use protein powder to add weight loss. The evidence. At least one study suggests that high-protein diets could be more effective than other diets for maintaining weight loss. But as Finnish researchers wrote in a 2019 study, there is a lack of knowledge about the long-term effects of high-protein intake, and data on the efficacy of protein powder for weight loss are scant. Fiber. Why it's used. Fiber, found in fruits, vegetables, legumes, and other grains, can help you feel full, which could reduce calorie intake. The evidence. Overweight or obese people who consume fiber supplements lose more weight than those who don't, research suggests. As a bonus, fiber may also help manage cholesterol, but eating high-fiber whole food is better than taking supplements, Saper says, because such foods often contain other nutrients that benefit overall health. Green tea. Why it's used. Green tea extracts, which contains compounds that some believe may increase metabolism, is marketed for weight loss. The evidence. Swapping out soda for green tea makes sense, says Bones of the Mayo Clinic, but there's little evidence that the extract helps with weight loss, and it can cause serious liver injuries. What else to try? Losing weight and keeping it off is hard, involving biological, psychological, and social factors. Saper suggests a plant-based diet with lean protein, healthy fats, and plenty of nutritious foods, such as legumes. Also aim to exercise for 30 minutes most days. And this next article is kind of important for those of us who are no longer what we refer to as spring chickens. How to age-proof your home. If you want to stay in your place for the foreseeable future, the strategies here can help keep you comfortable and safe for years to come. And there's a drawing here of a man and a woman standing in front of a house, and they're talking about the different things that you can do outside. But let's start with the whole article. Where do you see yourself living as you get older? Apparently, most of us want to stay right where we are. In a recent University of Michigan poll on healthy aging, 88% of the survey respondents who were between 50 and 80 years old said it's somewhat very important for them to stay in their homes for as long as possible. When it comes to staying put through the years, baby boomers may be leading the way. They're reinventing what aging means, as well as how and where it happens, says Zune Salomon, MD, Clinical Chief of Gerontology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, and co-author of Aging in Place, Harvard Health Publishing, 2018. And thanks to a growing number of professionals with expertise in the area, along with helpful products and advances in technology, aging in place is more doable these days than ever before. Of course, it's likely to require making changes to your current home, some of them simple do-it-yourself projects and some more challenging and more costly than others. But the upside of aging where you want to be can significant, allowing you to stay close to the people, places, and support systems that are most familiar. Also, the age-friendly improvements you make in your home may allow you to stay there for comfort for decades, and experts say be less expensive than a new living situation. Whether you're just starting to think about this or are well into your processes, we can help. Outside your house. Check out walkways, flat broad paths to your home, garage, and yard make getting around the property simpler. Get step-free. Creating at least one entry that has no steps to climb is ideal for ease of entry. Add handrails. Any stairs, inside or outside, should have sturdy handrails, ideally on both sides. Light it up. Good lighting is a safety essential. Motion sensor lights go on without a need to flip a switch. Prevent slick spots. Uncovered entrance and awning can keep the surface from becoming slippery in wet weather. Your age-friendly home checklist. Some homes are more adaptable to the needs of older adults than others. But whether you're in a ranch with all-in-one-level design, a cozy apartment, or a Victorian with steep stairs, evaluating your home carefully is key. So grab a measuring tape and a notebook, perhaps a trusted family member or friend, or a pro with expertise in aging in place, and walk through your home, noting any potential problem areas. A walkthrough typically will identify issues with simple solutions, such as the addition of motion-sensitive lights and others that may require significant work, like the installation of more accessible shower. Prioritize safety changes, such as minimizing the need for stairs, and know that you don't have to do everything at once. Here are the questions to consider. Can you enter and exit the house without difficulty? Flat, stable, well-lit pathways outside your home and leading to your yard, patio, and garage are ideal, as is a parking spot close to your door as possible. If the home doesn't have at least one step-free entrance, think about how you might create one that could involve the installation of a ramp. But if you consider these unsightly, other options include sloping entries with handrails that blend into the landscape, such as a broad paved path with a gentle rise that runs from where you park to your home's entrance, says certified aging in place specialist Kurt Clausen, president of the Clausen Remodeling Company in Ossipee, New Hampshire. For areas where stairs are likely to remain, the steps themselves should be in good repair, with sturdy handrails, round rails are easiest to hold onto, on both sides, running the full length of the staircase. Bright lights, especially at the tops and bottoms of exterior steps, along with the non-stick rubber treads or tape. Amazon sells a 35-foot roll of grip tape for $221, are smart for people of all ages. And check that welcome mat, making sure it's non-slip backing. Protecting entrances from wet weather, which can make surfaces slick, can be as simple as adding a plaster weather awning over your door, $30 to $200 and up at home centers and online. Installation is typically a two-person job involving a ladder, so ask family members to help or hire someone. Could you live mostly on one floor? Going up and down stairs multiple times a day becomes challenging as we age. So in the best of all worlds, you have a bedroom and a full bath on the first floor. If not, do you have the space to create such a master suite? A bedroom can often be carved out of a family room or a den with little effect on the home's status quo. Or you might be able to use a dining room, an alcove, or even part of the living room. A temporary wall can help. But if there's already a powder room on the first floor of your home, think about whether a shower could be installed inside. The typical cost is about $6,700, according to Home Advisor. For a full main-level bath, the average cost of this is $15,000. Sometimes space can be found in unexpected places, like under the stairs, Clausen says. In other situations, that first-floor master suite might require an addition to your home. A bedroom and bathroom addition runs about $62,500 on average, according to Home Advisor. Creating a bedroom and bathroom on the first floor doesn't seem possible. Perhaps your home could accommodate a staircase chairlift, a motor-powered device with a secure seat that can take you up and down a set of stairs. The average price is $6,000, including installation. Another option may be a home elevator. The latest offers are often compact enough to take the place of a hall closet, with diameters as small as 30 inches, although some residential elevators are big enough to accommodate a wheelchair. While prices of home elevators have come down, they still cost $2,000 to $60,000, with installation at least a few thousand dollars more. The first floor. Try one-floor living. A main floor bedroom and a full bath can go a long way toward making a home age-friendly. Ditch trip hazards. Get rid of them. Sorry, my studio was invaded for a minute there. Ditch trip hazards. Get rid of rugs with curled-up edges or high pile and tuck electric cords out of the way. Secure wood stairs. Low carpet, half-inch high or less, or staircase treads help reduce fall risk on wood stairways. Get the right bed height. The easiest for climbing in and out tends to be 17 to 23 inches from the floor to the top of the mattress. Improve your kitchen. Aftermarket pull-out shelves can allow for better access to heavy items such as large pots. Is aging in place for you? While most Americans stay in their current home long-term, this might not work for everyone. For instance, if your partner has a debilitating condition such as dementia, the round-the-clock care that's ultimately required might not be financially feasible or realistic for a caregiving partner. Just 40 hours a week of professional home care currently costs about $1,100, according to the Alzheimer's Association. Another option, a continuing care community, which offers different levels of care, where at the appropriate time the person with dementia can step up to memory care, says geriatrician Susan Salomon, MD. The other partner can stay in their original home in the care community and visit whatever they please. Is it easy to get around your most used in living spaces? Check the paths to take from the bedroom to the bathroom, to the kitchen and out the front door to make sure they're simple to navigate, without furniture or level changes, impeding you. With an eye to the future, you also want to have enough space to get through these areas without difficulty using a mobility aid such as a walker, scooter, or wheelchair. One consideration is the space needed to turn around while using a wheelchair or scooter. Guidelines from the National Association of Home Builders, which administers the Design for Certified Aging and Space Specialists, or CAPS, call for a clear 5'5" space in main areas, living room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, for wheelchair turns. Doorways are an important part of the equation, too. Typical doorways in homes are 32 inches wide, but those that are 36 inches wide allow for the easiest access. You'll need a professional to tell you whether you can widen your home doorways. It's possible, expect it to pay $1,200 or more to enlarge an existing door frame. Or see if pocket doors can be added, says Teresa Cadigy, an occupational therapist with Stanford Healthcare. Is your risk of falling at home low? Keeping floors free of trip hazards and having good lighting and sturdy objects to hold on to at key points in your home are the main ways to protect yourself from taking a tumble. So work to rid livings of areas of clutter and tuck electric cords out of the way. Ditch throw rugs and area rugs and carpets with curled up edges or more than a half an inch of pile. Hold remaining rugs in place with non-slip rug pad grippers, typically less than $20 for a 4x6 foot size. Replacing floors is a big job, but if you have a highly polished wood or marble, which can be slippery, it may be worthwhile to look into ceramic or vinyl tile or carpet that's no higher than a half an inch. For stairs, carpets might be best for traction and non-slip treads about $40 for a pack of 15, or tape, about $16 for a 2-inch wide, 30-foot long roll, can reduce fall risk on wood. For further stability, all staircases should have handrails, preferably on both sides. Throughout your home, check the height of the thresholds. Strips of wood, stone, or metal where two rooms connect. These should be no more than half an inch high at an exterior door and a quarter inch high between interior rooms. In bathrooms, no threshold showers or shower pans, also called roll-in or curbless, are considered the safest option, and they can look sleek and stylish. Most homes can accommodate these. Parts vary in price, with labor typically about $1,000, says Clayson, the certified aging in place specialist. Another option is a walk-in tub, which averaged $5,500 installed. Place non-slip stickers on tub and shower floors. Being able to sit while showering may also make a fall less likely. Consider a shower bench or chair with non-slip feet, $30 to $40. Space-saving wall-mounted benches come in a variety of materials, including teak, about $150 and up. Grab or grip bar, $7 and up, which you can grasp if you feel unsteady, are bathroom essentials. Bolted-on bars rather than those attached by suction are the gold standard. I'm a fan of having them at the entrance by the toilet, or at the tub shower, Cadigay says. A bonus, these now come in attractive finishes such as brass, bronze, and copper. Good home lighting is vital for preventing falls, too. So illuminate plans paths to bathrooms for nighttime visits and place light switches at the top and bottom of each staircase. It's generally wise to amp up the lighting throughout the home with LED bulbs of at least 800 lumens. For ease, consider rocker switches, broad panels you press to turn on and off, and motion-activated lighting, about $20 for 4 night lights, or smart switches, about $47 for 4. You can turn lights on with a voice command. Can you do tasks like cooking without too much effort? All the squatting, reaching, and lifting that goes into the kitchen can become harder as we age. A grabber tool, about $23, and a studio stepladder, handrails at the top and side, ideally, and non-slip treads can assist you in reaching high cabinets. But it may be better to rethink your kitchen storage. Consider moving often used items, especially those that are heavy or awkward, such as food processor or a large ceramic bowl, out of the upper and lower cabinets and storing them at waist or shoulder level. No easy way to do this? You might be able to make current cupboards more functional. Replacing some shelves with slide-out drawers, $60 and up, can create a better place for heavy skillets and pans. These cabinet inserts come in an array of configurations, online and at home centers, and can be added with minor carpentry work by a contractor and handy person. While you're at it, you may want to change out kitchen and bathroom cabinet knobs which can become harder to manipulate with age, in favor of handsome D-shaped pulls, a few dollars to $20 plus at home centers. Another tweak to contemplate, changing out faucet knobs that must be grasped and turned for lever-style faucet handles or touchless faucet activated when a motion sensor detects your hand, $53 and up. Adding a pot filter near the stove will mean no more lugging pots full of water from the sink to cooktop when pasta cravings strike, about $100 to $1,000 or more, with installation at $300 and up. For food prep, you may want the option of sitting a table between 28 and 34 inches high with spaces for a chair or wheelchair underneath it. Can do the trick. Another possibility is a step-down counter, a lower extension added to a current kitchen counter. For other regular chores, if your laundry isn't on the first floor, look for spots your washer and dryer there. Consider moving a few electrical outlets farther up the wall so you can plug in the vacuum, for example, without the need to bend down so far. Wall outlets are usually 12 inches from the floor. You may want some that are at least 15 inches up the wall and perhaps higher, depending on your particular physical needs. This requires an electrician and costs about $200 per outlet. A robotic vacuum could also be a boon. Would living there be comfortable for you? A few small modifications can help keep your home an inviting and relaxing place over the years. Consider your chairs and sofas, for instance, because standing from a seated position can become more challenging with age. Dining and living room chairs and upholstered furniture should have arms to make getting up easier. Stand assist or seat assist, $60 and up, portable devices that have handrails to support you as you stand, can also be slipped onto existing furniture. Those cushy couches and easy chairs could also become trickier to get out of, so you may want to choose firmer furnishings or restuff current cushions as needed. Another option, motorized recliners, about $100 and up, can boost user gently into a standing position with the push of a button. When evaluating your bedroom, check the bed height. A height of 17 to 23 inches from the floor to the top of the mattress is generally considered the easiest to get in and out of, but what's how you may depend on your own height and mobility. The right height bed is one where you sit at the edge with your legs in front of you, your feet touch the ground, and you have a right angle at the ankles, the knees, and the hip, says Princess Priscilla Flores, OTR/L, an occupational therapist at the Cleveland Clinic, Luo Rovo Center for Bryan Health in Las Vegas. For some people, a motorized adjustable bed frame, which can go from a flat position to a 90-degree angle, or anything in between, can assist in maneuvering from lying down to sitting up as a challenge. Prices start at $300, and some come with wireless controls and built-in USB port for charging devices. In the bathroom, think about whether a comfort toilet might be easier to sit down on and get up from. Standard-issue toilets measure about 15 inches from the floor to the top of the seat, and crouching that low can be challenging. While Americans with Disabilities Act specified toilets are 17 to 19 inches tall, or place a toilet seat riser, $25 and up, on top of the existing toilet, to add 3 inches or more to the seat height. Can you count on your community long term? Consider whether your town or city has the connections to support you want in the years to come. Some specifics. Are loved ones nearby? Having them close can be helpful for navigating the curveballs that aging may throw your way. Do you have an easy access to necessities? Think about whether food, medications, and other essentials can be delivered quickly, and whether services are available to transport you to and from retailers and medical appointments. Will there be chances for socializing? Think about whether friends plan to stay put or are dispersing new locations and whether interesting events and programs will be readily available. Is the climate going to work for you? Dealing with ice, snow, and other weather challenges makes more difficult as the years pass. Will you be able to get around safely all year and outsource tasks such as shoveling snow? In your bathroom, get a helping hand. Grab bars, which you can hold on to prevent from fall, are considered essential in a bathroom. And add a place to sit. A shower bench or chair allows you to sit while showering. Pair it with a handheld shower head. Pro help starts here. You may want to work with someone who has specialized in knowledge in this area when evaluating and renovating. For home evaluations, an occupational therapist or physical therapist who works with older adults, a geriatric care manager, or a senior home safety specialist can help here. If your doctor refers you to an OT or a PT, Medicare will usually cover the home walkthrough. After an essential assessment, a geriatric care manager may help for an hourly fee. Find info at eldercare.acl.gov. or Aging Life Care. That's AGINGLIFECAR.org. Senior Home Safety Specialists generally charge $199 to $390 for a home assessment. Go to agesofamerica.com and search for services registry. For renovations, some contractors and e-models have a certified aging-in-place specialist credential and can do a home walkthrough, often feel free or be hired by home projects. Rebuilding Together organization provides free safety modifications in some cases. Tech tools that make life easier. While there's no need to adopt every new technology-driven gadget, a growing number of products make aging in place simpler and safer. These include robotic vacuums, video doorbells that allow you to see who's at the door without heading to it, appliances that you can switch on with voice commands, and more. In fact, a 2020 CR survey of 39,251 members found that 22% of those who say they've made home modifications have installed a smart appliance, which connect devices such as smartphones or smart speakers and can be operated remotely. CR.org has the information available to all and ratings available to members. For many of those products, you can also check TechEnhancedLife.com. Here's a lowdown on three popular types of items. Smart speakers. These allow you to do a variety of tasks with your voice, such as calling family members, ordering groceries, and turning on the lights. They can remind you to take your medicine. Features vary, but for those who want a smart speaker with a screen, nice for video calls, the Amazon Echo Show 8 second generation may be the simplest. Amazon Echo 4th generation for $50. Amazon Echo Show, and this is the screen one, 8 second generation is $70. Google Nest Audio, $50. And the Amazon Echo Dot, 4th generation, for $50. Medical alert systems. These can call for help when you need it, and four brands here rated highest out of 7 for satisfaction in our 2020 survey of 1,869 members. Monthly fees vary depending on whether you opt for landline or mobile services or both, and on features such as GPS tracking and fall detection. Note that all 7 brands in the survey, which also included Medical Guardian, Medical Alert, and Life Alert, received fairly high satisfaction scores, with none slower than 80 out of 100. Bay Alarm Medical scored an 85. Mobile Help scored an 84. Lifeline scored an 83. And Great Call Lively Mobile scored an 82. Smartwatches. The watches that ride all have a certain health function, such as fall detection and the ability to call or render a relative for assistance. Apple Watches can also call 911 for you. The Apple Watch Series 8 has a larger display and most sophisticated health features, including an electrocardiogram function and a blood oxygen sensor. The Apple Watch SE with cellular, 44mm, $330. The Apple Watch Series 8 with cellular, costs $500. And Samsung Galaxy Watch 5 LTE costs $330. And they all scored in the 80s. Okay, let's do a little bit of road report here. News and expert advice to keep you ahead of the curve. First drive, Jeep Grand Cherokee Trailhawk 4XE. The Trailhawk's 4XE is an off-road capable Grand Cherokee that's also a plug-in hybrid. Its 375 horsepower turbocharged four-cylinder powertrain, wow, delivers plenty of oomph, and you can choose when to use the electric power, allowing the possibility of a silent driving experience in the woods. CR's take. The Trailhawk 4XE is not very fuel efficient and has a short electric range of only 25 miles. When driven as a hybrid, it manages an EPA estimated 23 miles per gallon combined, just 1 mile per redder than the conventional V6. And the price range ain't cheap, $60,000 to $77,000. Destination charge is $1,800 and prices driven was $65,000. What do you do if you feel drowsy while driving? If you feel yourself nodding off when you're at the wheel, the safest solution, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is to pull over at the first well-lit place you pass. Switch drivers if you can, or nap if you can't. 20 minutes of shut-eye has been shown in numerous studies to be enough to temporarily refresh you. Blasting cold air or music or slapping yourself in the face is not a solution, and NHTSA warns even drinking coffee may not make you sufficiently alert. How do I rid my car of foul odors? Kick the passenger out. Just kidding. Because many odors can be traced to something obvious, like spilled food or dirty gym clothes, a simple cleanup can work wonders. Toss trash, vacuum mats and upholstery, and shampoo carpets with products made for cars. If the stink is coming from the air vents, use AC disinfectant spray. Set the car's interior fan to low, open the windows, and spray the disinfectant into the exterior intake vents at the base of the windshield. Then change your cabin air filter. Smell a skunk while driving? Hit the recirc button when you open the windows a mile later. Still smells? Head to a car wash for an underbody spray. Vital statistics, 17 feet. The extra distance on average it takes to come to a stop when driving 60 miles per hour on a wet road versus a dry one. That can be the difference between an accident and a close call. For safety, reduce speed and increase following distance in traffic to account for bad weather. New cars you can count on. Our most recent survey reveals some important findings on hybrids and EVs and will guide you to the most reliable sedans, SUVs, and trucks. Shopping for a new car tends to be an anxiety-ridden process. It's one of the largest single purchases many people make, and no one wants to waste money or time on a model that will be a regular at the repair shop. Fortunately, CR can guide you to the most reliable new cars, including sedans, SUVs, and pickup trucks. Our recommendations are based on our auto reliability survey, which asks members about issues they've had with their vehicle in any of the 17 potential problem areas during the previous 12 months. We're talking everything from engine, transmission, and brakes to electrical system, noises, leaks, paint, and trim. We use their responses on more than 300,000 vehicles to calculate predicted reliability ratings for almost every new auto on the market. Highlights of this year's survey include some good news on sedans and hybrids and some warnings for pickup trucks and EV buyers. Sedans are still the most reliable. Each year, consumers abandon sedans in greater numbers for the size and utility offered by SUVs and pickups. But sedans remain the most reliable vehicle in our survey. Overall, the average predicted reliability score is 58 on a scale of 0 to 100, followed by SUVs at 51, minivans coming with an average of 44, and pickups at 39. The 10 most reliable models in their surveys. The vehicles in this chart are the ones that achieve the highest scores in our reliability ratings based on data for at least two model years. For the most reliable models, we also share areas where they're shown in our road test. And the highest one was the Toyota Corolla Hybrid. The strengths are fuel economy, smooth and steady ride, easy-to-use controls. And that's followed by the Lexus GX. The strengths there are strong and refined powertrain, quiet interior, composed ride and front seat. The next down, oddly enough, is the Mini Cooper. Strengths, handling, precision, and transmission. Precise manual transmission. And the Toyota Prius. Strengths, fuel economy, hatchback versatility, ride, and comfort. And the next one is the Mazda MX-5 Miata. Strength is agile, fun to drive, precise manual shifter, easy to open and close top, and eager engine. And that's followed by the Lincoln Corsair. Strength, smooth ride, quiet interior, strong engine, well-built luxury interior. And then the next one down is the Toyota Corolla. The strengths are fuel economy, smooth and steady ride, easy-to-use controls. And then there's the Subaru Crosstrek. It's well-cushioned ride, short stopping distances, simple controls, and fuel economy. And that's tied with the BMW 3 Series, which I've owned and loved. Strengths, agile handling, quick acceleration, short stopping distances, smooth transmission, and front seat comfort. And the lowest one in this ranking is the Toyota Prius Prime. Fuel economy, hatchback versatility, ride is comfortable and composed. And then we go further in the article about why. Well, first of all, let's look at the 10 least reliable models. These vehicles score at the very bottom of our reliability ratings based on data for at least two model years. The Ford Explorer and GM pickup trucks are consistently among the least reliable. The most reliable of the bunch is the Jeep Wrangler, scored a 24. Trouble spots are electrical systems, fuel systems, climate systems, engine, paint, trim, and noises and leaks. Boy, I can relate to that since my girlfriend has a Jeep. Mercedes-Benz GLE. Trouble spots, in-car electronics, power equipment, climate system, electrical system, body and hardware. The Jeep Gladiator, trouble spots, steering, suspension, drive system, electrical system, noises and leaks. The Chevrolet Silverado 1500 GMC Sierra 1500. Trouble spots are engine and electrical system and drive system brakes. Further down the tarp is the Chevy Bolt. Trouble spots are the electrical system, consider it's an EV, that's kind of bad news. Battery pack issues, electric drive. The Ford Explorer is the next one down. Trouble spots, transmission, power equipment, body hardware, steering, suspension, in-car electronics, and noises and leaks. And that's followed by the Nissan Sentra. Trouble spots are brakes, climate system, paint, trim, and noises and leaks. And then the Lincoln Aviator. It's interesting because the Lincoln on the other side did really well. Trouble spots, in-car electronics, climate system, steerer suspension, power equipment, body hardware, drive systems, paint, trim, noises, and leaks. The Hyundai Kona Electric. Trouble spots. The electric system, battery pack, and charging issues. Electric drive system, climate system, in-car electronics. And the lowest one down is the Ford 150 Hybrid. Has trouble spots of electrical system, power equipment, drive systems, engine noises, and leaks. And newly recommended, even a once reliable model can develop problems, particularly after an automaker introduces a new engine updates to infotainment systems. An automaker can also make fixes to an unreliable model so that the later versions become trouble-free. This list highlights the newly recommended models and those that CR's coveted checkmark. For more details and comments from manufacturers and locker recommendations, go to cr.org/reliability. The newly recommended are the Audi Q3, the Buick Enclave, the Chevrolet Corvette, the Ford Escape Hybrid, the Genesis G80 and GV70, the Hyundai Santa Fe and Santa Fe Hybrid, the Kia Seltos, Santa Sorento Hybrid and the Soul, the Lincoln Corsair and the Nautilus, the Mini Cooper, the Mitsubishi Outlander, the Nissan Rogue, ooh, I own one of those, Subaru Ascent, Toyota Corolla Hatchback, and Volvo S60. No longer recommended, models with declining reliability are the Ford Bronco Sport, the Mustang Mach-E, the Hyundai Elantra and the Kona, the Nissan Sentra, the Toyota Tundra, and the Volvo XC60. And let's close out with a couple of funnies. Redditors reveal the dimmest bulbs they've encountered. A work colleague once asked whether any of those ancient prophecies about the end of the world actually came true. I was asked for my biological name. You shouldn't drink carbonated water. It's full of carbs. Someone once said they couldn't wait for Halloween to fall on Friday the 13th. We don't need farmers because we have grocery stores. There I patiently stood in front of the commode, a 79-year-old man with a stingy prostate, waiting for what seemed a decade to finish relieving myself. I stood there, and suddenly my Apple Watch came to life stating, "Congratulations on meeting your standing goals for the day." I was visiting a friend in Minnesota, and we decided to go bowling. However, a squall appeared, dumping a foot of snow on the ground. Fearing the bowling alley might be closed, I decided to call. "Are you open?" I asked the man who answered. "Yes, why?" he said. "It's snowing." "Son, I don't know where you're from, but here in Minnesota, we bowl indoors." Me at 14. Can't wait to travel the whole world once I'm earning my own money. By now, mustn't forget the Tupperware at the work. It's the only one. And with that, we have just about run out of time with today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. It's Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long, and next week, and thanks for listening.